Thank you for tuning in to episode 4 of the Keto Matrix podcast. In this episode, Brittany and I have the distinct honor of interviewing Danny Vega, also known as Keto Counterculture. Man, oh man, let me tell you, this episode is packed with amazing things. Danny reviews everything from how he trains athletically, how he deals with stress in life, how he deals with the impacts of addictions, and what we should all do in order to stay consistent with this lifestyle that is keto. Hang on to your hats, lean in, take notes, and get ready. Also, thank you in advance for sharing the Keto Matrix podcast, rating and reviewing the Keto Matrix podcast, and always giving 5 stars. Those rating and reviews help us stay in front of more people. We appreciate it. Let's jump into the latest episode.
The Keto Matrix podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com. Now, let's jump into our latest episode.
So, Brittany, this has been a long time coming. I feel like probably one of the most anticipated guests for me anyway. I know
you've been talking about this one for a while, and I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but now since I started looking him up, getting ready for this, I've been looking forward to this one for a while too. So,
yeah, I was pretty stoked. So, one of the first things I kind of went through was, who in the world doesn't know this guy? Like, I feel like everybody knows him. If I know him, everybody's got to know who he is. So I started racing through all these topics that we talk about, and I had this really extensive list, and then I realized maybe there are a few people out there that still don't know this guy. So either way, we are honored to have Danny Vega on. Danny, what's up, brother?
And I'm honored to be here. I always love talking about the stuff I love.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's you know what? You seem like one of those people that no matter where you're at, people are comfortable talking with you and chatting you up.
I think it's probably because of the opposite. You know, like, I'm so comfortable talking to people. Maybe it puts them at ease. Who knows?
Yeah, well, maybe. I feel like you seem pretty approachable.
Definitely.
Which is good. But having said that, since there's probably still 5 or 6 people out there that don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of background? Where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up? Who is Danny Vega outside of like the keto community?
Oh man, well, I was born and raised in Miami, Florida, Cuban American. I'm the son of 2 people who came from Cuba, so I'm the first generation born in Miami, and played football my whole life, ran track, played football in college, was always obsessed with training and anything having to do with meathead stuff, of course. I was a teacher's pet in college. I always say this, I was a teacher's pet in the weight room. My strength coach, I loved my strength coach probably more than my position coach. we were very close, and he broke my heart when he left us after my sophomore year. But I stayed in touch with him, and that's kind of relevant because after I graduated, I wanted to continue on to be a strength and conditioning coach, and I told him about it, and at the time, he was already at the Timberwolves, so he became the Timberwolves head strength coach. And he was already like kind of on his way out of strength and conditioning. He was telling me, you know, he had like 3 kids already. He's like, don't do it, don't do it. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it. So I went to grad school at University of Florida, got my master's in human performance with the School of Applied Physiology and Kinesiology.
Okay,
and,
cool.
Yeah, so I was a VCU head strength coach for basketball. And did that for a few years, and then I got out of strength and conditioning, and I've been in pharmaceutical sales and medical device for the past 11 years. Like I said, I've always been involved in training and nutrition stuff, personal training. Of course, when I got out of strength and conditioning, I had to personal train for a while I looked for a job. And, you know, always been a competitive person. You know, I've competed in powerlifting, CrossFit, now indoor rowing, which I haven't done in a while because I've been so focused on this bodybuilding stuff. But I found keto in June of 2016, and it just honestly had so many benefits that I just never really looked back.
And so what you're saying is you don't really know much about anything then.
I pretend.
Yeah, you just kind of guess and make some changes and hope things work out. This is why everyone should know who you are. And if you don't, man, like, you got to follow this guy, which we'll have links in the description for that. But awesome. I love that synopsis on you. So beyond that, you have any kids? Are you married? Are you still bachelor?
Of course. Well, I forget that there's other people in this world besides me. that's what my wife said. So I got got two boys, two beautiful boys, Desmond and Dean. Desmond is 7 and Dean is 4. They're both on, you know, low carb, paleo, ketogenic diet. My wife, Maura, who is her own presence, you know, she pushes me, you know, if it wasn't for her, she just pushes me to be better, you know. She's ripped. She's an amazing person. She's just an amazing mother, an amazing partner. And I love the fact that, you know, we do this whole fat fueled family thing together because we're really on the same page. And I think obviously that's one of the things that we try to tell people when we talk to them about doing diet and training and all that together. Like, you kind of have to be on the same page. It makes it so much harder if you're not.
Yeah, true story.
So on that note, with Maura, did you guys get into keto at the same time, or kind of what did that look like for you guys?
Yeah, so ever since we got together in 2010, we kind of like melded together because we were such good friends. We were like best friends before we got together. And we got together and we both started to explore like paleo right around the time she got pregnant. Or a little bit after, because she was still eating tons of Cuban food when she was pregnant.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, she used to be a vegetarian, which I was terrified when she got pregnant. And then she's like, the good thing is that her body started to ask her for steak. So she cut that out. And then we were on paleo for like 3 or 4 years. And then when I moved away from CrossFit and I started doing the powerlifting thing, I started to do this like higher carb stuff. And unfortunately, my wife did too, and it wasn't good for her. You know, it just, for her brain, for her mood and well-being, it's just, her body hates carbs, and her brain tries to kill her when she eats carbs. So we did that for a few years. Luckily, she was ready to go when I told her about keto. In June of 2016, I started on the 12th, and she started like 3 days later.
Oh, so wow, that's awesome. Yeah, so my wife took 4 months of watching me before she was like, "Hey, okay, fine, I'll jump in too." So that's awesome. No, I mean, that's definitely better than some. Yeah, I mean, that's good. At least you guys experienced things together. So that's pretty awesome. Having said that, the whole fat-fueled family, and I feel like I don't want to assume things, right? So you've mentioned a couple things like paleo and powerlifting and CrossFit, and I feel like we should probably define some of those things for people. So paleo, it's, you know, whole food eating, like, so no processed anything. You keep everything limited. Now, were you like super strict paleo, like no nuts, no legumes, nothing like that as well? Or
yeah, no legumes, but sometimes we would sneak in some macadamias. There was a period there when, like, after about a year or so that we transitioned more towards primal, because okay, we really loved dairy, and we loved grass-fed raw dairy. So we had like lots of local farms that we would get raw milk from, and raw butter, and just delicious raw dairy. And so we did a lot of that. So we were definitely, even back then, with paleo, it wasn't like super low carb keto, because there were the, you know, eventual times where we would just have like this paleo junk food, just like there's keto junk food.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Paleo treats. But whenever, and we did start, that's when we started to intermittent fast a little bit. And we did start to see that, like, if we would be putting on some weight, we would just get rid of like the fruits and the sugars, and then we would just lean right out. So yeah, there were probably times that we were like in and out of ketosis. And I noticed that when I would be in ketosis, I felt that feeling for periods of time, and I would just lean out real quick.
Man, that's awesome. Very cool. I know, Brittany, did you ever really dabble with the whole paleo world, or?
No, I considered it for a hot minute and was like, not so much.
Yeah.
I liked peanuts too much, honestly. Yeah. I was like, right. Peanut butter? No, nope. Sorry, that's not for me. I
peanut
can't do it.
For me. Yeah, that's peanut butter is my weakness too.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So I think one of the things that, as I was kind of thinking about what we should discuss and talk about, that I feel the listeners really are having trouble with, even if they don't say it, is the mental challenge of being keto, right? Or any diet, right? Any change or challenge that's different from the norm, and like how you prepare to kind of go through that. I feel like, I know my clients will talk to me, I'm sure you have this with the amount of followers that you have, where people think we just get up every day, eat keto, and we don't have stress or triggers in our life that would cause us to kind of vary off that form or want to just like stuff a piece of cheesecake or chocolate chip cookie in our mouth or or better yet, overeat keto, right? Like
I have an
extra steak that I really didn't eat at all, but I was feeling stressed out. And I wanted to have it. I feel like there's not enough people that recognize that. I mean, it's a daily commitment, right? Like this is something that you have to look at and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I have set macros I'm going to follow. I'm going to fuel myself with the fuel I need and not the fuel I want. And so like, how do you approach that? What do you do to kind of like mentally stay strong, put yourself in that box and kind of ride that out? Or do you not at all? Maybe you're one of those like crazy intuitive people.
No, you know I'm not. You know I'm not because I'm real transparent with it. Like, so the biggest thing, before I talk about like kind of what I do is I'll notice that a lot of the people that try to ask me about this stuff, they have this sense of urgency that is not, in my mind, healthy because it feels like there's an expiration to their resolve or an expiration to their, you know, their commitment. So it's like, okay, I need to hit this number on the scale. And when I do, it's party time, you know, like, and I really, I'm always like slow down because like, that's the biggest problem. I think that people, they're like, you know, they got this timeline that needs to end soon. This suffering has got to end and I'm not losing the weight. And you know, it's been 3 weeks already and still I've only lost 15 pounds in 3 weeks. You know, I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah, for sure.
Weight, but it's like, you know, these people, like, they have unrealistic expectations. And so I think the first thing that I ask people is, like, why are you doing this? You know, what? And of course, unfortunately, a lot of people come to keto for the weight loss stuff. And I understand that. But I always say, you know, come to keto for the weight loss and stay for everything else, you know, because that's really where the good stuff comes. You know, the brain benefits, the ongoing health benefits that we learn about more every day. The research is getting really, you know, extensive now, which is awesome. But me, like personally, I found that I was talking about this yesterday to someone. You know, it's nice to say that keto is, it helps with your appetite and it helps with satiety. High fat helps that and makes it easier. But then at the end of the day, what ends up happening for a lot of us, especially in, you know, this country and like, you know, more developed countries that are just really, really busy, is that we have lots of stress and we have lots of like other emotional issues and other things that go on that I don't think any diet, even the most perfect diet, are not going to help with. You're going to have to address those things. So the thing that I've really focused on the most, and this is kind of like an ongoing thing for me, because when I'm stressed at night, I want pleasure. And the easiest form of pleasure for me is food. And food is my number one crutch that I use to get that emotional little high. And of course, what ends up happening, what happens? You're full already. There's absolutely no physical need for you to eat. And it's okay to eat not for physical reasons sometimes, but you know, when it's every single night and you're overeating and you know that you're gonna regret it and you're gonna wake up and you'll be like, okay, today I'm gonna be good. And then that nighttime comes and you don't do it again. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you eat. For me with keto, like I'll tell you with what happened to my son, my 4-year-old who got hit by a car, you know, 3 weeks ago, I put on in 3 weeks about 9 pounds. Just from overeating fat. And my wife is like, she's like, okay, you're taking this glass, measuring glass, you're filling it with all this butter and chocolate and peanut butter, and you're eating, you're pouring it into molds for fat bombs, and you're eating most of them. You just ate a jar of oil, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's say like 1,200 extra calories in just fat. So, you know, it's important, yeah, calories don't matter as much, but at the end of the day, this is energy that there's absolutely no way, unless I get up off the couch and run, you know, 4 hours and vomit because I ate so much fat, there's no way that I'm gonna burn that off, you know, and that accumulates quickly. And so what I found, and this is, like I said, this has been very recent, and it's been a really good week for me.
Man, that's great.
Yeah, I started to meditate at night because meditation has been such a good thing for me. And it's helped me so much with my starting my day right. That's the first thing I do before I drink my coffee, before I do my devotional, my other reading, I meditate. And so now I started Sunday night, so now today's Wednesday, so it's been several days now where I choose a meditation, and I choose a guided meditation, and I just spend 5 to 10 minutes meditating. And it doesn't have to be meditating. It could be something as simple as, if you learn about mindful eating, just doing a mind-heart-body scan, or a mind-heart-body. So you're looking at, okay, what's the physical issue right now? Are you hungry? Chances are you're not. Maybe you're thirsty. That could be a thing.
Yeah.
Your heart, what are the emotions that you're feeling? And then your mind, you know, like, what is your mind telling you? And keeping in mind that this is not like a diet mentality. This is not like, if you're doing it for one of those reasons that are not healthy, you're not allowed to eat. No, that's not what it is. It's about discovering why you think you gotta eat. And if you do something like that at night, where you're like, okay, I'm satisfied, I'm hungry, why am I wanting to eat? Then at least you can really start to identify what those triggers are.
Man, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so you identify the types of triggers. There's environmental triggers, like, you know, it's time to eat, or every time I see this person, I think of eating, or, you know.
You got to lose that friend, man.
Yeah, right? Like, we had so many times. It's the same thing, like, as alcohol and drugs, you know, like when you have those, yep, those people that you have to get away from. Well, I know you're, you know, he told me about your background. So, you know, those things that, you know, when you talk to people and you're trying to identify, it's easy to find. You know, there's environmental, there's physical, and then there's emotional. And if you can identify those things, I think that's the beginning to getting back to like a more healthy way of eating, even with keto.
So with your guided meditations, are you, I'm assuming you're using an app, right? Because we are in the technology world.
Man, so. If I could buy stock in the Calm app, I would.
I'm telling you that
the Calm app is the best app. It's amazing. It's got, of course, it's got all these guided meditations and all these different subjects and master classes and series. But then it also has, and I've used this with my boys, it has like sleep time meditation type stories. So it has basically, sometimes, like this one was, it has famous actors that read stories. Like there was one of the guys from Game of Thrones read this story about a mythical cliff in New Zealand that has all these cool, this cool history. And it's basically what a lot of the, I don't know how to pronounce them, Maori, the indigenous people of New Zealand, they believe that that's where their soul goes at the end of their life. That's their soul goes off of that cliff and goes off, you know, into the next world. And that's like, you know, just another use for that app. But the app has a daily meditation that's always, and I wake up and I'm like, okay, what am I going to be, what's going to be the focus today? And it's amazing how the app and sometimes my Bible devotionals will be together, like kind of on the same page. Like I'll have, there was a day shortly after my son got hit, there was a day where it was talking about letting things in, letting bad emotions, things that we judge as bad, things that we want to avoid. And then, you know, the Bible devotion was about, like, you know, or it's actually that message at church that day on Sunday was about, you know, letting go and, you know, letting God, you know, casting your cares, you know, to God, you know. And then the next day it was all about like strength, and it was all about, you know, how. And so, you know, I love that because I have no idea what it's going to be. And then it kind of sets my day. Like, this is what I'm going to focus on today. Like one day this week, it was about just taking the time to appreciate everything. Like when I see my son come out of his room in the morning, he says hello to me, and I look at him in the eyes and I'm like, this beautiful boy, like, just appreciate it. Appreciating the cup of coffee that you have, taking time to, you know. So that app, like I said, I can't say enough good things about it.
The Daily Calm. So it's called the Calm app.
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna have to download that, and I'm sure the listeners will too. Let's. I don't want to go too much into it. I'm sure everybody's probably really jumped in on the story with your son and how that stuff planned out. But I do want people to understand the gravity of that situation. So, can you kind of walk us through like that moment, the moments leading up to it, what exactly happened, and kind of like talk us through that?
Yeah, you know, I talked about this because we have our podcast coming out soon, the Fat Fuel Family podcast, and so yesterday was the first. Or 2 days ago was the first time we recorded after this happened. And Maura was talking about it. It was interesting because that morning, she had a bad morning. Something happened in the morning that was usually would frustrate her, but she had this sense of calm. It was very weird. And then my friend Rachel Gregory, who you may know as Killing It Keto, she was in town, and I took her to yoga with me in the morning. Then I took her to the gym with me, to the MI40 to train. And then I dropped her off at Starbucks, and I had to go see my accountant. And then I picked her back up, and we were going to go home and record a podcast with Maura. So Maura was – oh, and by the way, I forgot that I had locked myself out of the house, so Maura had to come home from the gym, which is her only break all day from the kids. And and again, she would usually be really pissed off, and for some reason, that day, she's really zen, which it just goes to show, you know, like she was getting prepared for something, and she didn't even know it. So she was at home, and my nanny comes to help us twice a week for 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours each time. Okay. And the nanny had taken the boys. She was going to take them to the pool so Rachel, Maura, and I could record a podcast. And so I was on the way home. I was literally like 3 minutes away. The boys left Maura. And there's this little sidewalk that cuts across the whole neighborhood. And so, you know, it'll be sidewalk and then there'll be a crosswalk, you know, as you're crossing across the neighborhood. And okay. There's several streets. And the front street, it's a gated community, and so the first front street is the busiest street. It's not busy per se, but it's like it's where a lot of the action is. You know, you got all the mailboxes in the whole community are there, so there's parking spaces. People park, they check their mail, and they go on. And then there's the pool that's right there. So they were about to cross that last street, the nanny and my two sons, to go to the pool. And my oldest always checks before, and he tells Dean if he can go. And because Dean is on a little scooter thing close to the ground, and Desmond is on a big scooter thing where he stands up, and there was a truck that was parked in one of the mailboxes, and like in front of one of the mailboxes, and the truck pulled out right as Dean went out to the street. And the truck came out, hit my son, ran him over. It was just, you know, it's the worst day of my life, but it's the biggest miracle of my life. You know, it's, mm-hmm. That's how I tell people, because, you know, I get a call from my wife who is running across the neighborhood, left our garage open, left our front door wide open, and telling me like that Dean was hit by a car. And, you know, I'm screaming. Rachel's next to me, poor thing, being there for the situation. And I get to the scene, and Dean has already been taken to the hospital. Which I was only like 2 minutes. So I had called 911 already, and there was, when I was leaving to go to the hospital, that's when the ambulance was coming. So he gets taken to the hospital, and all I see when I get there is my son's head is full of blood everywhere. His ear is basically ripped off. I have no idea. There's hair loss. I have no idea if his skull's cracked open. I have no idea, you know, if there's, you know, what's going on. And my husband's like, you know, he's bleeding like crazy. I don't know where it's coming from. His hair is lost. His ears ripped off. And I lost it for like 15 seconds. I gained my composure. And then, you know, I was like, we got to be strong. And that was basically what happened. And then there was the, you know, every single checkpoint was just good news. You know, came back, no swelling of the brain, no fractures of the skull. You know, and then no internal organs damaged. And so it was 2 days of hell in the hospital, and my son went through hell, but it was an amazing miracle, honestly. And it brought us together closer than ever. And, you know, it was no one's fault. Even the driver, I saw the video because there's the Ring app where basically you could see from the doorbell.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
My neighbors had it. So I was able to see, and you know, it's just perfect storm, man. It's just a perfect storm of just bad. And but like I said, you know, just very, very, very grateful that we've put it behind us and that we're moving forward, and my son's doing amazing. You know, my son, I think, is happier now than he was before.
Right, that's a huge blessing. And I mean, for context, Dean and Desmond are what, 4 and 7, I think, somewhere around that range. Yeah, so I mean, we're not, these aren't like, these are like children, like kids.
Yeah, and Desmond, you know, Desmond having to go through that. Desmond was an emotional wreck. You know, he's getting better. But this is all stuff that we need to definitely address in therapy because, you know, with PTSD, the longer you wait, you may think everything's fine and just the worse it gets. So I want to make sure that they're good. And so we're in the process of making sure that he has someone to talk to and that, because Dean, you know, he's such a strong kid and he's so happy and he's doing so well. But if you bring up that day, he changes the subject. So yeah, there's something going on, you know?
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, it's so hard to talk about because, you know, everybody starts to feel so bad and I get it, you know, obviously it's, like I said, it's one of those things you never want to get that call, but I'm just so grateful, so beyond grateful. I cherish every single moment with my son and both of them, you know? And so it's not like I needed it. I got these tattoos on my arm for a reason. I got this memento mori on one arm and amor fati on the other arm. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, memento mori is basically Latin for remember that you have to die. It's a reminder that you may die today. And amor fati is basically love your fate. It's basically everything that happens to you in life is either good or necessary. So, you know, we didn't need this extra reminder because we already had this in front of our mind, but
yeah, that's, I mean, man, that's huge. I think that those things, right, are, you know, you had mentioned being prepared, you know, it's like Mauda was prepared for other things that she didn't even realize, you know, that were going to come throughout the day. And I think that that's the, you know, there's certain things that in life, obviously, we can control, right? I can control what time I wake up. I can control what time I go to sleep for the most part. But I don't know what my day is going to look like. You know, I don't know if I'm going to go out and get hit by a truck or what that looks like. So, you know, if there's certain things that we can do daily to help prepare ourselves for that as we deal with this food addiction that I know I'm addicted to food, hands down, like beyond the shadow of a doubt. I will forever be a fat kid. No matter what my body says.
Some people choose because my father, and he's spoken about it like crazy. My father's a recovering addict, and you know, my dad's the type of person who's like, no, I'm not an addict. You know, I recover, blah blah blah. But you know, I kind of see it as like, if you're an addict, you're an addict. You know, and so it's one of those things that, you know, especially just because of the fact that this is something that you're gonna live with for the rest of your life. You, it's the same as like fixing your type 2 diabetes. If you go back to what you were doing, you will be type 2 diabetes right away. If you go back to doing what you did before, you will be instantly an addict.
Yeah, so, for sure. I mean, and that's, so, you know, there's always this thin line. You know, some people think I'm crazy because I advocate for cheat days for some people, right? And it's like, yeah, I don't think you should have a cheat day every week. I don't think you should have a cheat day every month. But I do think that if it's your 50th wedding anniversary, that you don't have to have a keto cake made for that. You know, like that's okay. You know,
I totally understand that, man, because there's the sanity factor, and that plays into what I said earlier about this being a lifestyle. You know, if you are going to eat that cake that day, and that means that you're going to go another, you know, 7 months of good eating, then good for you then. That, if that's what it takes to help you sustain, you know, people are like, well, we always crack up, you know, because people always ask me this, can I eat this? Can I eat that? I'm like, who do you want me to ask? I'm like, because when someone asks me, like, when I ask myself, can I eat this? I tell myself, yes, I can eat this because I said so, you know, like, don't look to me to tell you what to eat, you know, like you're a big boy, big girl, you know, you need to take responsibility and decide for yourself. And, you know, so it's just one of those things. And it goes back to like, what are the rules for this? Isn't that against the rules? And I'm like, it's not about the rules.
Yeah, you know, I'm laughing so hard because I'm thinking back to your live video where Mauda was, somebody had asked her about, I don't even remember what it was. I think it was some type of artificial sweetener or something. And Mauda was like, yeah, you could eat it. I wouldn't. But like, go for it if that's what you want to do.
I know. And that's the thing too, like, because we did a lot of artificial sweeteners before and now we're not. And, you know, we understand that it's like the person who, you know, gets better in something and then forgets where that person came from. You know, like, you're gonna tell that other person who's new, who's not on the same at the same point on their journey as you to not do what you did earlier. I mean, you could tell them, look, I did it when I was early, but maybe it's not a good idea. Maybe it's going to make it harder for you in the long run. But at the end of the day, you know, if it's going to help them transition, then go for it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of those. And Brittany, you could attest to this, right? Like, I think most people will talk to me and say, man, this guy is intense. And I will straight up say my first 3 days of keto was absolute hell. I spent it locked in the bedroom, man. I didn't know anything about keto flu and electrolytes or any of that stuff. I was just like, I'm cutting out carbs. I'm doing it. And I paid for it, right? Like, there was definitely a better way to make that transition that I should have embraced. But at the same time, I went 3 or 4 months before I ever had a cheat or had anything that was not keto, didn't use any kind of artificial sweeteners. I really was like, I'm going to kick this addiction or at least work towards that. So whenever I start talking to individuals about how they do the transition, I'm like, you know, it really depends on you, your lifestyle, stress, and how those things work. But and where you came from before that, right? Like, I didn't jump into keto for weight loss. I did it more for an efficiency thing and changing and empowering my brain and productivity and all those things. So if people are like, I just want to lose weight, I'm like, well, you know, do intermittent fasting and eat cupcakes, like knock yourself out if that's what you want to do. But in looking at the crutches that I know I had that I had to get rid of, it was like, I can't do it. I can't eat a whole bunch like erythritol and then hope that I'm not still craving a regular sugar-filled treat, right? Like, I can't do that. If it helps you because you're like 600 pounds and you cut back from 900 grams of carbs every day to 100, like, that's huge for you. Like, help you and go through that. But, you know, for some others, that, you know, I guess I say all that to say it's a per case basis depending on you as an individual. And I can't tell you that. That's something that you have to say. But with the preparedness and the mental aptitude to look at your life and make those decisions, I feel like some people think they look at keto and they're like, man, this is extreme. It's crazy and I can't do it. Or they do it, they fall off, and then they don't know if they can come back. And I guess my point is you have to look at other things in your life, right? Mentally prepare yourself for the challenges that may come, whether it's food, whether it's your children, whether it's work, you know, you get fired and you lose your job, whatever it is, to be prepared for whatever that challenge is. And I think that so many people overlook that aspect. Like, this is a lifestyle. I'm never going to stop eating keto, but that doesn't mean that life's going to stop. I know that I'm going to have something that may trigger me to want to eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's, right? And you know, if I'm not mentally prepared to handle that situation, you know, I could slip. And so I guess my cheat thing, and Brittany, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm always like, if you're going to cheat, I think you should put the day on the calendar and get to that day. It should never be I got stressed out and I ate whatever. Like, I always feel like it shouldn't be a thing that emotionally drove you to said cheat. It should be something that you planned out in the future, that you did, that you had a limited time frame for. You did it, you left, and you came back. Then, you know, falling and succumbing to the weakness of whatever the events are surrounding it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's a huge part. And then there's, you, like you said, you got to know yourself, because, like, my wife... It's funny because my wife and I are very similar in the sense that we have a very addictive personalities. But for her, food is not one of those things, because she was a dancer her whole life. And so she's so trained at restricting herself, and she's just so good at it. And so she's the type of person who could buy a, you know, a 90% chocolate bar and have 2 squares. And I'm just like,
what about the rest of the bar?
Yeah, like 2 squares. I will eat the whole bar. And then, you know, not only am I going to eat it, I'm going to eat it fast. And she's like, why do you eat it fast? You don't enjoy it. But no, I do enjoy it.
I do enjoy it quickly, but I enjoy it.
Very, very quickly. I would not enjoy it if I wasn't eating it as quickly. I would be like, yeah. How can I eat this whole thing right now? You know, so that, like, some people could do that. Some people do great with that gradual go from like 200 down to 50 carbs over like 8 weeks. For me, I gotta be like, boom, let me go right away, because I'm gonna go too back and forth with the cravings and stuff.
Yeah, that's where I feel. But Brittany, where are you at with that? I mean, I know, obviously, I know we've had the conversation of when you've had a cheat day and how you've come back from it and how you felt and carb brain and the whole nine yards. But I mean, from the addictive aspect, where are you at?
From the addictive aspect of it, it's something that I really struggle with, like, on with the concept of cheat days, because very much I'm a big fan of them personally, because from that sanity standpoint of it, But then if I look at it from like the true addiction standpoint of it, like if I told any one of my alcoholics, hey, you get one day, so long as you put it on the calendar and put it between an 8-hour eating window of 12 and 8, you can drink as much as you want in that time, but you have to stop. And to expect them to not isn't real. But on the same note, then you look at the people that are successful at having a cheat and coming out of it and then doing well for however long until they have their next one. So it's something that I feel like it's something I struggle with regularly because I'm trying to figure it out all the time. I'm like, God, I need some help here. Like understanding not just generally across the board, but specifically for me and where I'm at, because I don't want to have any one thing controlling me, whether it's food or a substance. Like, so what does that look like for me? And then in general, what does that look like if I'm talking to others and giving advice? And it's something that I'm still working on. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just felt really convicted.
I want to add something that I think is very important in this whole cheating thing and what happens with people eating and the emotions they experience. And like, so for me as a coach, I'm not going to advocate for it, but I'm going to approach them with love and understanding when they do talk about it. And because the problem is that, you know, all of us, I mean, I'm the worst at this. Like, we make moral judgments on ourselves, and some people do it to others for the choices that they make for eating. I'm like, you are not a bad person because you ate crappy food. Right. You know, that's the biggest problem that I think a lot of people deal with is this. There's this extreme regret, and there's this wild swinging of the pendulum that happens, unfortunately, with this cheating, because it's like, okay, I cheated. Time to give myself 500 lashes, fast for 5 days, and like, you know, eat fat only for a week. And I'm like, you know, that's the where I come in as a coach, and that's where I'm like, listen, no. The good news is you're not going to correct this tomorrow. You're going to get back on the plan tomorrow. Okay, that's all it is. You just, you know, the way you were supposed to eat today, just do that tomorrow. Because it's, again, playing into that whole thing again where we're talking about the lifestyle versus there's an expiration to this. It doesn't matter. You know, you don't have, you know, there's not a judgment coming in 5 days that you're going to have to account for the cheat that you did, you know?
Yeah, we should call that cheating with grace.
Yeah,
should go on a t-shirt. But yeah, I mean, and I think that's one of the biggest things is that understanding that, right? Like the emotional aspect, because putting yourself in that negative thought process and mindset is exactly how we got to be overweight or out of where we wanted to in the first place, right? Like, you know, we kept going back in this up and down of how we're going to, you know, pay the penance for whatever it was that we did. And it's like that just doesn't work out well. Let's keep it New Testament.
That's great.
Man, so that's awesome, right? So one of the other things that, you know, I know everybody probably expected, Danny Vega's going to get on, so we're going to talk about, like, building muscle on keto and how all that looks. But we're not. We'll do that on another episode at another time, and I don't want to bore Brittany to death when it comes to those things. But I do want to make it really clear, because this is one of those things that I feel like a lot of people listen to me say it, and they're like, this guy is insane. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. But would you agree or disagree with the statement that we absolutely do not need carbohydrates to survive, as far as eating them?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do not need to eat carbohydrates to survive. Absolutely, no.
All right. So, having said that, though, then there is some mental preparation necessary for preventing us from wanting to eat them all all the time. Because let's face it, carbs taste good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, talk about. I know that you've done a lot of different like body hacks and changes and adjustments. I remember one of the first podcasts I ever listened to you were talking about, you know, the transition from powerlifting to CrossFit and, you know, how you felt in making that transition. You know, how did keto for you when you started, especially being a performance-driven individual, how did you feel? How did you get through those issues and arrive kind of like where you're at right now?
Yeah, I'm in a very favorable position when it comes to this, because I was lucky enough to have gone through bodybuilding diet right before I went keto. So I had gotten injured in March. Well, I was injured since December of 2014, but I didn't get the MRI until March of 2016. So I had like two or three meets in between there, a 700-pound deadlift, you know, some 600-plus pound squats, all on a knee that had a torn meniscus. And finally, when I was preparing for a big meet, I got the MRI finding, and of course, my meniscus was torn. There was a bunch of other stuff. So that's when I was like, okay, that was March of 2016. I was like, let's. At the time, we had a friend, Tucker, who was a bodybuilder and a powerlifter, and I was like, let's get Tucker to write us a diet for me and Maura to do. And Maura and I were both on that white rice, ground turkey, and mango salsa grind for like, like 3 or 4 months. You know, and like the broccoli and the crab, and then it's like the carbs started like at, you know, like 400, and the fat was already down to like 70 from the first week, and the fat got down to 50 for me and 30 for Maura. And by Memorial Day weekend, both of us were super lean and super miserable. Just lean and angry. And then, you know, like I was already like, my carbs were like under 100, but my fat was at 50. So I was like literally no substrate, no energy to actually perform. And we had like two or three weekends there. And luckily it comes up on my Facebook, you know, memories, where it's like some of these epic cheat weekends where I'm like filming her. And I think we were both like just so dumb, because we were like, you know what, we eat so well all week, we're going to film ourselves cheating so we could just like, and so it was just a disaster. And then finally, I had my friend Trevor, who was for months telling me about keto. And so when I switched to keto, I basically felt instantly amazing, because my carbs were already low. And so I added a bunch of fat, and too much fat, actually. The first week, I ate 10 slices of bacon, and I think I drank all the bacon juice. I was like, give me the bacon juice. It's like, no more turkey bacon. I couldn't eat bacon for like 2 weeks. I was so disgusted by it.
Oh, man.
So, and then the other thing too, like from the performance side, was that I was in the gym, and I took the first week off, because I was like, you know what, let me take this week off, because I was super busy with work. So I took that week off, and then the week that I came back, I did it as a deload week, which is basically you decrease the volume of reps and sets, and you decrease the weight. So it's kind of like an active recovery week. So then now I'm 3 weeks in, and at that point, being that, you know, I'm already metabolically flexible, and I'm, you know, good metabolic state, you know, my health, and the fact that my carbs and fat were low, and I added fat. Week three, my workouts were already great, but my training and my pumps didn't really get good until 3 months in. So I have that personal anecdote that I can tell people that, oh, I'm, you know, my workouts suck, you know, and there's only so much so many electrolytes you can take, and so much stuff that you can do. The bottom line is there's going to be a transition. That at that point, you have to say, am I really going to commit to this, or am I not going to commit to it? If you're not, that's fine. But if you are, then just realize and manage those expectations, and understand that it's going to take a few months to get back. And then, like, if you're a strength athlete, I tell a lot of the strength athlete friends of mine, like, I have a guy who's strong. This guy's just a big old strong man. And, you know, he's like, man, these big, heavy days are just not back yet. I'm like, well, how long has it been? He's like, well, I think it's been like 8 weeks or 9 weeks. And I was like, look, keep going. And when we hit that like 3 to 4 month mark, then that's when you can say, then I'll bring in some carbs on that heavy day. Because that's when the carbs really do become a performance enhancing drug. You know, I've only done like a carb up like once or twice in my 2.5 years of keto. And one was recently when I did that 50,000 meter row, where I talked to Peter, and he was like, you know, he's an optimized fat metabolism guy. He's super smart with that. And I had 280 grams of carbs the night before that row. It was sweet potato, it was creamed rice, and, you know, steak and eggs. And I felt like the night, I was concerned. I didn't know what I was going to feel, you know, years. And so I felt like I was floating. I was just like high on carbs, and it never came down. And then I woke up the next morning and my blood sugar was slightly elevated. It was like 102. And I was like, oh crap. My ketones were down, but they were still there. And then I did the first 37,000 meters fasted. And by the end of that, my ketones were already like at 2-something, and then my blood sugar was in the 80s. And then I had 80 more carbs that day, and then I had 13,000 more meters that I had to do. And after those 80 more carbs and that 13,000 meters, I tested myself 30 minutes after that last row, and my blood sugar was 68 and my ketones were 4.4.
So wow. That's an example
of like, you know, using those carbs as a performance-enhancing drug when it counts. But you know, this whole thing, I think it's changing very quickly. I'm writing the Ketogenic Athlete book right now, and that's one of the things that I'm right now, currently, the chapter I'm writing about is physique athletes and strength athletes, and how even 2 years ago when we started the Ketogenic Athlete podcast, it wasn't even a topic. It wasn't even like a consideration that people, and now I'm seeing a bunch of physique athletes as well as strength athletes that are at the very least using it on the off season to reset their hunger, to lower inflammation, and some of them are transitioning completely, you know, completely. So
keto, yeah.
So it's definitely changing. You know, I'm not going to say that it's going to be the better way for most people, but there's a lot of people that would benefit from at least 3 to 4 months a year in keto that are athletes.
Yeah, hands down. And you know what? I think at the end of the day, right, this is adopting something that is totally against, you know, you said you were kind of like a meathead base that had the bro science of things, like to try to get away from what's traditionally always been there in our mind is tough, right? So that transition, it's going to be more and more people that have to embrace it. And eventually I think that comes together. But kind of shout out, what are all the things that you're doing right now? Because I know you're doing a ton of different things right now for, you know, the keto community, your family, you in general. Share what some of those things are so that people can kind of stay tuned.
Okay, I'll start with the training and diet stuff because that's less selfish. Just, you know, I'll sell my stuff after. So diet wise, recommitted to really strict carnivore with Maura just about a week ago. I'm seeing changes like almost every day. I've lost like 2 pounds this week. I'm feeling amazing. My training for the next 2 more weeks. Thank God, only 2 more weeks is really bodybuilding focused. Just, it's like meditation in the gym because you have to just focus so much on the muscle and it hurts and it's long. And then, and not really that much time for cardio. So I plan on going back to my style of training, which I've developed over the years, which I really love. For 37-year-old Danny, it's perfect, which is basically start my warm up with intervals on the rower to get my heart going, and I kind of start slow and get faster every interval. And I'll, in the off periods where I'm resting from the rowing, I will do a body weight exercise that is related to the muscles that I'm training. So if I'm going to do like legs, I'll do body weight squats. If I'm going to do upper body, I'll do like push-ups, and then I'll do a power movement like a box jump to just, I want to stay powerful and agile, and I feel good like an athlete. Then I'll do like a strength movement, like kind of one heavy movement, and then I'll do some bodybuilding stuff. And then lots of those days, I'll also do rowing at the end for conditioning. I love that. It's one of those things where it's like, hey, Danny, you want to go climb a mountain? Yeah. Hey, Danny, you want to go do sprints? I can do all of that if I'm training that way. So I'm excited to get back to that. Other than that, I'll be quitting my job this Friday. I keep on saying it, but I'm like, am I really going to do it?
Man, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. And, you know, people say, oh, that's so good that you're at the place where you can quit your job with your business. I'm like, well, I'm not at the place where I can quit my job, but I can't continue to live this way. I have to commit, you know? So I'm living in faith. I'm living in just really going to be practicing my stoic values and stay, you know, good. I got a bunch of money saved, so that helps. And then other than that, we launched our Fat Fuel Family blog, which we're so happy because that was just so much going on with that. We had 2 different developers that didn't work out. And you know, right now we have, the shop is open. It's got a bunch of programs. We got online consults. People want the t-shirts. So we're gonna be putting the t-shirts up there soon. Working on the Ketogenic Athlete book for Victory Belt, which is like the biggest ketogenic, you know, publisher. Let's see, what else? The muscle building program, the keto muscle program with Ben Pekulski. I'm also starting a business with Ben Pekulski that we'll be talking about in the future. Right now it's in the early stages, but we're super excited about that. So okay. As you can see, I mean, lots and lots of stuff. Fat Fuel Family is going to be traveling like crazy. We're going to Arizona to visit F-Bomb we're gonna do stuff with them, like advertising type stuff with them for their brand in October. Okay. At the end of October, traveling to Bunker Hill Cheese to do stuff with them. Like they're in Amish country, so they're gonna put us up over there. So just a lot of the stuff that we are really pursuing our purpose, where Maura and I are so passionate about it. The boys are on board, you know, sharing our passion of what we do with the family, with nutrition, fitness, peaceful parenting, unschooling, and mindset, and sharing that with other people and showing other people that we're not trying to say that it's easy, but it's totally doable and it's seamless. And just being able to spend more time with my family, especially in light of what happened.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's absolutely awesome. I love that you have that stuff going on. Anything we can do here, obviously, to help support that stuff, we are all in for. You know, there's so many other things that I know we have to get you on for. I definitely want you and Malda to come on and talk about raising the kids ketogenically and the unschooling and the being able to sit down a 4 and 7 year old and talk to them about how they're processing their thoughts. Like, I mean, how many people could even say that? Like, yeah, I sit my 7 year old down and we talk about their thoughts. They're like, yeah, right.
Every single day, it's a daily process. Like this morning, you know, my wife was frustrated with him because, you know, my oldest he's struggling with the reading, and, you know, she gets frustrated, he gets frustrated. And it's important to just step back. I'm like, give me the phone. You know, I called him up and I just brought him back, you know, and it's an ongoing process. You can't just tell them once. It's got to be every single day, you know, teaching them how to breathe, you know, how to take a step back and realize it's okay to feel these feelings, but you got to manage the way you handle these feelings. You know, it's like, I'm giving you things that I wish I had, and you are going to be so happy because of it. You're going to be a happy individual. And the way we change the world, this is how I see it, is we create more happy individuals. People who are happy are just not jerks. I feel like people who are jerks are not happy. And so if they are happy, it's less likely that we will have jerks. And we have a lot of jerks who are just very unhappy, you know?
That's so, like, I mean, all these simple models, we just need to throw them out and have people embrace them. Like, hey, if you're happy, you won't be a jerk. So you're a jerk because you're not happy. Figure that out. Like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
I mean, Elle Woods said it best in Legally Blonde. She said, happy people just don't kill their husbands. So exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands. So
my wife would argue that too, because, you know, she calls me closet sociopath because, and we just got our 23andMe back, like, not that long ago. And I have this gene that basically dictates that I have, like, no empathy. And so she cracks up about it. And she's like, we're all lucky that you're happy, that you're a happy sociopath. Because if you weren't, then you'd be killing people.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. But having said that, we have to get you and Malda on together. I know we were talking before you came on, Danny, about, like, the hormonal changes and things that happen with keto and all that stuff. So to be able to have Malda, who's been on for a long time, and Brittany kind of go through those kind of things, I think that would be absolutely awesome as well. And then just sharing some of the business things too. I mean, I left my job in December, so I totally understand where you're at. I think it has been the most challenging year for sure, but also the most fulfilling year. I mean, it's absolutely awesome to do this purposefully and passionately and be able to really pour into people. So I think you're gonna love what's right around the corner as far as that stuff's concerned. But I don't want to keep you on for too long. I like to respect time, and, you know, we really appreciate you taking the time out. Keto Counter Culture, right? That's your IG.
Yeah,
for the 5 or 6 people that don't know that, we'll put that in the show notes. I'd love if you could shoot me an email with, like, your blog link and all that kind of stuff, so I could put that in the show notes as well. Brittany, is there anything that you think we haven't covered that people need to know from Danny before we let him enjoy the rest of this wonderful Wednesday?
Okay, this is probably something that I should know, having been an athlete, but you always lift barefoot in all of your pictures. Can you explain that to me? Because I was always told very strictly to wear shoes into the gym. You and all your buddies are all barefoot. And I'm like, what are they doing?
Oh, man, this is like, okay. I am, like, you see me and you don't think it, but I am the biggest hippie you have ever met. Like, I realized that at the core of me, and my sons were born this
probably
way.
Why you're a happy sociopath. So we're lucky you're a hippie. Okay.
You know, honestly, the foot thing, like, I started to go a lot more barefoot because there was a possibility that I was going to climb Kilimanjaro this year. And the biggest issue is stuff with your feet. I mean, it's not the biggest issue. There's lots of issues. 15,000 feet, oxygen deprivation, all this stuff that happens. But like, you know, so I was like, I started to walk barefoot. And, you know, it's so ridiculous. The people are like, because people see me walking barefoot on the street or, you know, and it's not on the grass. And they're like, well, you know, for grounding to happen, you need to be in the grass. I'm like, I'm not doing it for grounding. I already do grounding. You know, this I'm doing it so I can get really hard, calloused feet and strong feet. So
you were like Fred Flintstone and everywhere.
Yeah, man. And that's basically nowadays, like I basically most days of the week, I'm not wearing shoes. And half of those days, there's also not a shirt either. So it's really just, but you feel really good. You get really good biofeedback and you're really in touch with what's happening when your feet are in contact, even with leg stuff, like my squats and everything. I used to have, you know, depending on the type of squat that I would do, I would have an elevated heel or a flat sole. But I've been squatting in flat soles for years now. So it was already very close to the ground. And so I think there's something to be said about strengthening your feet. And there's this really, I forget her name. Her name is Katie something. She's all about movement and just being in contact with the ground there's something about it to me. But it's really nothing like, I'm sure there's plenty of science behind it, but I just like it. I'm
just like, hey, that's cool. That's cool. Again, happy sociopath. You want to do it? Keep you the outlet.
Keep them happy. Keep them happy.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny is I would have never thought you would have said that. I mean, like, I know you're a sneakerhead, right? Like, you like shoes.
Oh, I am. And, you know, and lately, I love it because my sneakers are so clean.
Yeah, because you're not wearing them.
Because you're never
like yesterday, I got these because my obsession is Air Max 90s, Air Max 95s, and Air Max 1s. Those three shoes are my shoes. Also Huaraches. Like, I'm a big fan of Huaraches, especially because I was like basically poor for like the first 12 years of my life. I don't want to say poor. My parents would be like, you're not poor. We didn't have money. We had one bathroom for the whole house. We, you know, my dad cut lawns. And when I first got my first pair of sneakers that were a name brand, it was my dad was our landlord owned a shoe store. And my dad came up with the idea of he would cut the landlord's grass for free, and he had a big, huge house, if he let me and my sister pick a pair of shoes from the store. And my first pair of name brand shoes was in seventh grade, and I had Huaraches. And they were white and like neon colored, and they were black in about 3 months because I wore them everywhere. So I have these yesterday that I wore in my 90s that I just picked up. They're like Miami Vice colors, and I wore them to say Dean to Chuck E. Cheese. Because I'm like, look how good I look in Chuck E. Cheese. You know?
Dude, that's absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Man. Well, listen, brother, we appreciate you taking the time out. We look forward to having you on in the future. Obviously, if there's anything you need from us, man, just hit us up and let us know. And we will have all of your locations and contacts and things that you're doing in the show notes so people can find you. You know, the five or six that don't know you. And we are praying for you, keeping you pumped up, and looking forward to all the things that you're releasing here shortly.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, not a problem. Hey, Brittany, if you got nothing else, man, we're out.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Thank you guys so much, and we will talk to you soon.